it was just like, oh, so this is just like Cartoon Network punk rock music, right? Oh god, I think I hang on. Can you guys hear me?
I can, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Did I cut out there?
None of us laughed at your joke is really
Listen, we've been going a while. I'm kind of phased.
Okay. You know what? That's it. I hate you all. The
podcast is over. I didn't want to be mean. I'm just that was what I.
Yeah, we're just being really honest here.
Look, when we've been going as long as we have, we have to run out of outrage at some point.
And also just like this group is so deeply an unhealthy combination of rambling.
Okay.
I love this one.
Alrighty. That does it for what we've been listening to. Now on to the little mini catch up we've got for you folks. Some of these will have a lot to say, some of these maybe not as much, but these are all that most of us have listened to. Let me just say it. We'll talk about the Taylor Swift album at some point, not this episode. Still I need to give it another listen, give it some more time.
Please stand, spare us this time.
Spare us. Hopefully a few of you listen to Joanna Newsom after my recommendation, but please calm down. We'll get to it on the next episode, more likely than not, okay? Okay? Now, for the complete opposite of Taylor Swift, this new fucking Gulch album, I'm going to try to pronounce this. I can't say this word. Don't yell at me. Don't make fun of me. Impenetrable Cerebral Fortress. This thing it rips. It shreds. It owns my ass. It slaps. It melts. This thing, it fucking rocks, man. Rock and roll music with guitars, baby. This shit is fucking... there's a video on Twitter of some guy of like some like hardcore dude just standing in front of his speaker, just like the fucking Blair Witch Project blasting this album, and that's
the vibe.
There's literally only two ways to listen to this album. It's either like that, either Blair Witch Projecting, or you're in the most dangerous mosh pit you've ever been in your entire life. You feel like you're gonna fucking die, but that's what keeps you going. It's the fact that death is so close to you, but it's not there. And it definitely supplements the fact that I have not been in a large crowd in a very long time. This sort of supplements that. God. It's a mosh pit inside my head.
It really is. It's part of why I think I took to this so immediately is because it encompasses the exact kind of like 15 minute hardcore thrash sets I would see in like grimy, dingy DIY basements before quarantine started, and like it captures that better than anything that's been released since quarantine started, and just made me immediately want to fling myself back into that.
Yeah, this album is so fucking good, and I think a big part of it, as well as like the band's just impeccable songwriting, being able to condense everything so perfectly as the genre should. But like beyond them, like Jack Shirley produced this record, and he, as always, is pretty fucking good. But like this year, he is 3 for 3 on just incredible releases. Like you've got No Dream, you've got the Nuva Lisker, all of them, and then this, and all three of them are just ridiculously good records, and he adds so much punch to the songs here.
Yeah, this album fucking rips. I listened to it today and was very, very impressed with it. It's like you're saying with the 15 minute length, it's really well constructed in that way where it's short, it's to the point, it doesn't overstay its welcome, and it just repeatedly punches you in the face. And I also really like how it flies at that like 99 miles an hour speed the whole way, and then they kind of slow down on the last song, but it's only in comparison to the 7 songs before that. Like, Sin in My Heart is a really great closer, but it only really feels like a closer in energy compared to the rest of it, just because the rest of it is so, like, batshit.
It's a cover of Sue and the Banshees.
Oh, I didn't even... didn't even realize that. That makes
it's pretty. Yeah. It's pretty easy because this band is very, very different from that band.
Yeah.
This album, it reminds of that one tweet about a guy to punk song lengths, except it's like album lengths, where it's like 15 minutes or less, great. 20 to 30 minutes, good. Around let's say 30 to 40, like, okay. 40 to 60, this band is confused. Over 70, great again.
Yes, it does come back around to being great again the more you stretch it out to.
Yeah, this I have a feeling that this album is going to take the just the Warm Bodies short punk album of like hardcore weirdos that I'm just going to listen to more than anything else this year. I just cannot stop when it comes to those short punk albums.
Yeah, based on how much I've been listening to Hell songs this year, I have to imagine I will listen to this Gulch album again.
And I'm not even a hardcore guy. I really don't like this kind of music for the most
part. Oh, me neither. Like, I'm not usually like...
It is. I think it strikes a really good balance where it is simultaneously giving you that like punch you in the face kind of aggro energy while also being relatively accessible. Like, I think the screaming vocals, like as someone who used to not really be able to get into stuff with scream vocals, and now I don't mind it nearly as much, but it's not like something I really listen to a ton of. I think the vocals are relatively accessible in that kind of a way, and I think in general they're just so tight as a band and their riffs are so kind of punchy that they do manage to be very satisfying in a way that like comparing it to Daughters and Hell songs, which I've also been listening to a lot this week, it's like that album is just like setting your brain on fire. Like, it doesn't make sense in the way that this album does, and it doesn't like easily click into place in the way that this album does, but this album doesn't lose energy or intensity because it is a little more straightforward. I think its straightforwardness kind of helps it be kind of direct and to the point and fun.
Yeah, baby. This fucking, like I said, Gulch. Again, hopefully they come to St. Louis once this is over, because I want to get all sweaty. I would like to get coronavirus in the Gulch mosh pit. I would not mind that, honestly. I would accept that for all intents and purposes.
If that's how you have to go, you know, like,
if that's the way I get COVID, that's like a pretty good way to get COVID, honestly.
Yeah.
That's probably the best. But nevertheless, Dil, did you actually have any thoughts on this before we go to the next one?
I just think that this record is utterly fantastic. I mean, Jackson kind of nailed it when he said that the aggression on this album packs such an energy and keeps it in a way that is very, I think, accessible to a wider audience. Because if you think about albums in this style, they're very much... They feel closed off to like the people who are already into them and can't, you know, to newcomers. They're very dense and they're very I think hard to get into. But this album just serves as a wonderful entryway into the genre. It helps that it's very short as well. I think that's also something that Daughters early records did as well, like, you know, like Hell songs and Canada songs, where they were only like 12 minutes, you know, 15. This record is 15 minutes long. You know, you can listen to it, you know, on a run or while you're driving to work or something like that. And it just satisfies everything that you want out of the genre without overstaying its welcome and doing it in such a way that just utterly shreds ass. And so.
Alrighty then, let's get this Katie Day record that just came out. I know Rose, I think you're maybe either you or Nat are probably the bigger fans. So folks, you might have noticed there's a bit of a weird cut between Dill's thoughts on the Gulch record and me moving on to the Katie Day record, and we had a bit of a recording glitch with our program Zencaster. So and because of the weird recording glitch, we had to reset the recording, and the beginning of what Rose said about this KU Day record went missing whenever they re-uploaded their files on Zencastr. So apologies about the weird glitch, but we're going to keep the rest of the discussion because I think it's a good discussion. And yeah, we'll just keep it moving.
Been slow, but over the time she's more and more cleared up her production in a way where there's fewer bells and whistles, and it's like just her at the center of it instead of like kind of being clouded up by a lot of flashy production, I guess.
To bounce off of that, I'm not as familiar with Katie Day's stuff. I think this might actually be the first release of hers that I've listened to, but I think what this does especially well is it captures the sort of feel of what it's like to right now be going through a sort of online sapphic relationship with like somebody who is like several hundred thousand miles away, and the ways in which she does that of not entirely often talking about it in these very concrete narratives, but as these more abstract concepts or feelings that are tied to it, I think really captures the vibe of it in a way that I haven't heard a record do quite as well. I'm not super into this just yet. I feel like I need to delve into it more, but I will say that the last three song suite on here has this really nice flow to it where it eventually ends with this like just really great build into a crushing finale, and I think that's one of the things that's going to keep bringing me back to this.
Yeah, that final run is especially just incredible, even for her. Like, it's just a gold standard run of like really great songwriting in a way that I think feels a lot grander than anything she's attempted before now. Yeah, and pretty much, although I will say, like, for me personally, this album feels more like an appetizer for the real event this year, which is the sequel to Some New Form of Life entitled Magic Fire Brain, which, according to posts from Debbie and Katie, seems like it is going to be one of the most batshit insane records this year.
I am very excited to hear Magic Fire
Brain. I am.
Hell yeah.
I am ready for just anything goes. Just, according to Katie, it is her best album, and they made it in 2 weeks. Just, oh.
I would also, as maybe like a button on this conversation, would like to point out the really great Katie Day tweet from yesterday where she asked people to stop sending her the drill tweet that says, age zero, baby, I want my data. Age 25, millennial, I want my data. Do you not see how fucked up this is?
My other favorite recent post was when she was like, yeah, I was thinking about titling the album, Oh, Gay Computer.
Oh, Gay Computer.
Okay, I'm surprised no one has mentioned the whole Taylor.
It's not worth talking about.
We don't need to mention that.
Funny post that just became a too much of a discourse thing.
The one tweet was very, very funny. I will let our listeners find that on their own. It's a very funny tweet, and some of the Swifties misinterpreting it is very, very funny to me.
And the follow up to that tweet was even better, like, because they super misinterpreted it.
Okay. Anyways, this is a good album. I need to give it more listens because I enjoyed Flat Network when it came out, but I've been sleeping on Katie since. So I need to stop sleeping because this is a pretty decent, interesting record.
TS does not stand for Taylor Swift. It stands for transsexual.
Let's move on. The new Illuminati Hotties mixtape, Free IH. This is not the one you've been waiting for. This record, like another one, like I said, full disclosure, Illuminati Hotties represented by No Earbuds. I'm entering there. So I knew about this record. My history circus, it's actually very funny. So I knew about it coming out. I was like, oh, you know, I knew it was gonna be a surprise release. I didn't know about the occult classic stuff. So the story, in case anyone missed it, mysteriously, this artist called Occult Classic dropped a self-titled album on SoundCloud. And a number of artists like Lucy Dacus, Sadie DuPont.
Lucy Dacus and Pop. They, like, all the people that Illuminati Heist toured with in the last 2 years, they picked up a favor for them and just tweeted it out quietly without saying anything.
So people were like, what the fuck is this album? Is this like a supergroup? And people were like, well, I don't know what
this even though band. They literally say the name of the band multiple times.
Exactly. But people were just like, well, who's this band? And it turns out, well, this is a great record. I don't know. I mean, it's like, could be like a supergroup, could be. I think people picked up pretty quickly that it was Illuminati Hotties. But again, the album is only up for like 24 hours, so it gets taken down. And then Sarah announces the record as sort of a self-release. It's simultaneously a
self-release to the blonde.
Yeah. I was going
to
say.
Like, literally, they're just doing it to get off their label with a quick album that is not as impactful as the one they're trying to make. Because apparently she's been working on the other one for like 2 or 3 years now. Like self-engineering it, because that's her job, is just being a studio engineer, and she's learned a lot of tricks since then, which is going to get lead into my first point about this record, which is this thing, like the variety of styles and production ideas going on in here is just so incredible to listen to. Like their first album, Kiss Your Frenemies, is pretty good, but this is just like such an immediately like, oh fuck, they're doing crazy things now.
Yeah, it's like, it's really good.
Content Bedtime is,
oh God,
one of the most ridiculous things I've heard all year. Will I Be Canceled If I Write a Song Titled If You Were a Man You'd Be So Canceled is one of my favorite album openers this year.
Everything
about it just has this bombastic and ridiculous stomp. Like, it knows that it is a inherently throwaway records, so they're just like, fuck it, we're doing anything. Yeah. And it's a joy to watch.
Yeah, the different ways that they use the variety of production styles to their benefit, with the sort of nature of it being a mixtape and mimicking the sort of tape deck sound, and the ways in which mixtapes generally have varieties of different songs and different sounds, like, really works to their favor. And if for no other reason than they're going with a bunch of different approaches here, and all of them kind of end up working, I'm excited to see kind of how that translates into a more polished, like, studio product.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. Yeah, it makes me intrigued about, like, what does the album sound like then, if this is what we get on the mixtape. And I think I'm just gonna say this, more artists should take advantage of the mixtape format. It's like, obviously hip hop has been doing it for fucking ever. But there's not enough like indie mixtapes like that are just like, hey, just put this online, just fucking do whatever the fuck you want, just fun, carefree. Like, it's as I said, I would love more albums in this style, because it's a lot of fun. It's very, very angry at times, and I think that fucking rules. Although there's one thing with this album, and I'm Jamie, if you're listening, I'm so sorry that I'm saying this about one of our artists. But the one interlude, the radio station interlude, it was just like, oh, so this is just like Cartoon Network punk rock music, right? Oh God, I think I, hang on, can you guys hear me?
I can, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Did I cut out there?
None of us laughed at your joke. Is really.
Listen, we've been going a while. I'm kind of phased.
Okay. You know what? That's good. I hate you all. The
podcast is over. I didn't want to be mean. I'm just that was what I.
Yeah, we're just being really honest here.
Look, when we've been going as long as we have to run out of outrage at some point.
And also just like. This group is so deeply an unhealthy combination of rambling.
Okay, let's get on to the next record. We talked about this one pretty extensively in before we started recording, so we might not have as much to say. But this record that we missed on the quarter two catch up, because I think it literally came out like a couple days before we put out the list and then the podcast. The new Arca album, Kick One, Kick I. I Kiki, really like Kiki,
baby.
Little Kiki starring Adam Sandler.
God damn it.
Not out of outrage yet. Not out of outrage yet, it seems.
We got a little life left in us. We're gonna fight to the end till you're dead, you bastard.
Okay. I really have a lot to say because I'm still like this album is still like a lot to process, but it's really fucking good. Arca can step on my throat any fucking time of the day. She's amazing.
In stilts,
in whatever she's whatever kind of shoes she has on the cover, she can step on me any fucking day of the week. But this album, it's really fun. It's a fun album, which is a bit surprising to say for an Arca record, because the last couple Arca albums have been like either horrifyingly intense and scary, or just like, what the fuck is this? This is like, what the fuck is this? But there's like just there's a lot of fun to be had on this record. Like, Non-Binary is fucking amazing. KLK is one of my favorite songs of the year. That song
absolutely ridiculous.
Fucks my ass up completely. What was the most recent single?
Make a Cafe?
Thank you. That one's great.
Yeah, that was the one I was specifically going to shout out. That one also rules. I think it starts out really strong, that first half.
It kind of burns out
right at the end, unfortunately. Like, I think it gets a little too much.
I think after KLK is when the album starts to burn out a little bit. Yeah. But, like, it's still, like I said, those first eight tracks are fucking incredible. I mean, you got Bjork singing in Spanish. Like,
Rosalia coached her on that, apparently.
I do agree that the album, it's a little front-loaded. I will say, though, the last Rip the Slit and the Sophie collab are two of my least favorite songs, but the very last two songs, Machote and No Queda Nada, I think are both really, really fucking good. And I think in general, like you were talking about, like, I think the thing that works so well about this record is that on the self-titled Arca album, it felt like all of the singles were very good, but it was kind of like, in order to make room for Arca's vocals being introduced as part of her music, she was kind of like, okay, now we're going to pair everything back here for me to do like this falsetto vocal. And she does some of that on here, but I think here, what's so fascinating about her music in general, her production style, the crazy, glitchy, all of that, is being like really well fused with the kind of pop sensibilities, and it's all kind of one thing as opposed to being like two different halves of it. Like, they really, it brings everything together in a way that really, really works, in a way that didn't quite work for me on the self-titled album. And I think in general, it's just like Arca's real arrival as like an actual pop artist that is taking her insane experimental stuff and channeling it into something that is somehow like, it somehow does kind of make sense in a mainstream context. Not every song here, like there are some songs on here that are a bit too intense for any sort of like Spotify playlist or whatever, but like, I really do think she really, really effectively manages to translate some of these really wild out there ideas into surprisingly just like effective songs. And I also think that at this point, having a Rosalia feature is just cheating at making a good song. like you've made a good song now by getting her to sign on. Congratulations.
Yeah. At risk of coming across as contrarian and having my transness revoked, I don't entirely know. This didn't do it for me. I just might not have been in the right headspace for it when I was listening to it earlier today. But I don't know. Something about the ways in which it's been, it like charts that sort of culmination of her style didn't totally click with me in terms of like the different elements she's been playing into across her recent albums. I think that might just be because I actually revisited the self-titled last month, and I know it's kind of a divisive album for how it changes her sound or how she kind of strips it back, but I think it might actually be my favorite of her projects just because it is such an intensely vulnerable and like empty album where she has these barest of elements that are just getting across these heavily emotional things with as little as possible. And I think that something about the ways in which the vocals on here meshed with the instrumentals didn't quite do it for me right now. Although I will say I do love KLK because, like you said, Rosalia, just cheat right up to just great song territory there. But I think I'm going to need to spend a little more time with this one and see if anything changes.
Totally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Next on the mantle, Jackson, I'll let you take it from here on this one.
Nicholas Jarre refuses to stop going in. He will never stop going in. And this year especially, he's just like, what if I released just so much music? We are now at Nicholas Jarre album number 3 of this year, and I believe there is a 4th on the way, which is just bananas, including the Against All Logic album, and then Senzius, which I believe Maddie has gotten into now and is aboard the Senzius.
Senzius really great.
It's good.
I like this album slightly less than Senizaz, but I think that it is very good in its own right, and I like how it kind of I like how the two albums, one of which is more broken up into individual song ideas, and this is more clearly like we're just gonna go freewheeling, like every single song is just constantly changing and mutating, and the arbitrations between songs starting and ending is kind of besides the point. It's just like 4 parts of this one continuous thing, and it's very, very, very cool. Nicholas Jarre always make there will never be a bad Nicholas Jarre album. At very worst, his albums are like interesting and fascinating in a way that maybe I can't find a way into, but I'm never bored. There's always something really innovative and groundbreaking and fucking weird going on, and Telos is no exception.
Yeah, baby.
Oh
god. Can we mute Maddie? Can we do something like that? Anyway, I agree with Jackson. I think this record is beyond fantastic. I think it's my favorite Jarre project of the year so far. I have seen that feature of it having this sort of formless stretch to it, you know, songs just kind of begin and end, and they have these movements and crescendos and all these different parts to them, and I've seen that used as like a criticism of the album to where it's not very cohesive. I very much disagree with that. This feels incredibly cohesive. It's used so much more as just a piece of, you know, acoustic sonic art, I think, is what he's trying to go for, because you can very much tell that he's creating a space around the album, and that also helps with the interactive website that he launched just a few days before the album dropped, where you could click through the website, which was this 3D rendering of the album cover, and you could zoom in and out of it, and you can click on different parts of it, and it was this very incredibly elaborate mapped out thing. And I think what he's trying to go for in that is he wants to create a sonic space. He wants to envelop the album in owning a certain area. Because when you compare this to Senizas, and I haven't listened to Senizas and then Telos back to back, but they do feel, I feel like they do bookend themselves rather well, to where Sunizas is this very, you know, this is very insulated thing. It's very personal, and it helps with the cover art, which is just, you know, all black and the small outline, and then To Last is this is much more drawn out, elaborate part of it. And I think part of the space and the ownership of space goes into the narrative around how Nico was marketing the album, because he was playing clips of it on Radio Alhara, which is this broadcast station in Palestine. And during the broadcasts, in the intervals between songs, he would talk about the situation with water ownership in the West Bank, and about how you know, Palestinian farmers do not get a whole lot of water for their farms, and the water disparity between Israeli citizens and Palestinians. And he very much felt like this was a way to, I guess, reconstruct music into a different form of protest. Because Nico was a very political artist, you know. We've had him with Sirens, and we've had him with parts of, you know, his earlier stuff as well. And he comes from a very politically charged artistic background with his father as well, from Chile during the Pinochet regime. And so all of these factors are working themselves into Te Las in a way that really makes the album, again, inhabit a certain space that goes beyond just the typical sonic structures that we have for it, you know, the songs and then the album length and the ideas of what these pieces of music are meant to do.
Hell yeah.
All right. I'm not gonna say it.
Let's just do
okay,
it.
Okay. I'm not gonna say it. Okay. Next record. One that I the new 100 Gex.
I'll start it. It's fucking 100 Gex, 1000 Gex, Tree of Clues. It's the remix album. I don't know what people expected, because I don't know what I expected either, and it's a fucking mess. God.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think remix albums, especially in a
the problem with this one, it's so specific. Like, everyone was trying to like out-gex the Gex when you should not try to do that. It's already at maximum capacity.
The only time it's really successful on the album is the Black Dresses remix, which successfully manages to out-gex the Gex, but then
by the time further screaming.
Yeah, but by the time you get to that, it's just like the whole thing is just an onslaught of a lot. I mean, you don't have the RAM in your brain to process the Fall Out Boy Hand Crushed by a Mallet remix and everything else that's on here. Like,
and like back to back with the fucking Caro Caro Benito, Charlie XCX, Rico Nasty. Like, it literally is doing like all in one moment where you're just like, what is going on?
I will just say, overall, I do not like this album, and I think the point that I'm wanting to get at with it is that when I say that like the original 1000 Gex is lightning in a bottle, I don't mean that to say that like, oh, they're never gonna top it or they're never gonna make another great album again. What I mean by lightning in a bottle is that like, is it's Dylan and Laura as a duo. That's lightning in a bottle. Like, that just like those two working together produce like just such like magic for me. Like, just being able to, they're just on the same wavelength. And what this remix album proves, I think it makes, for me, it improves on 1000 Gex. It just proves that like, hey, that album is really fucking great, because you have all these different people kind of coming in here and trying to do their own thing with the Gex style, and it just, for the most part, doesn't work at all. Like, some of these are really fucking bad. Like, I didn't care for the A.G. Cook Money Machine remix, the Danielle Harrell, that one's okay. I'm disappointed by the Hand Crushed by a Mallet Fall Out Boy remix. I'm very disappointed by it. I thought there'd be more Patrick Stump on there. It's a little disappointing.
That injury reserve one.
I don't hate that one. That one
I don't like that one at all. But Parker had nothing to do with the production of it. It was just Dylan making a beat for them.
Yeah, I mean, I get why people don't like that one, but I thought it was fine. I didn't quite understand the amount of hate it has. The fucking Stupid Horse remix is terrible. I really think we need to do a very large scale investigation on what the fuck is going on in England.
Listen, Stupid Goat, I just fell out of the boat. It's genius.
It's fucking, it's so bad. It's so fucking bad. It's like I said, whatever, we need to, let's get the Gremlins out of the UK and then get the Gremlins, get the Labour people, we'll get them out of the UK, make sure we protect our boy Jeremy Corbyn, but the Tories and all these people, let's just keep them there, we'll quarantine them. We'll cut off the internet. Just let's just let them be. I don't want to hear from them ever again. I don't want to know. Just let them be in their own little bubble.
Society has progressed past the need for.
See, they already did that. It was called Australia.
Odd. Okay. Anyways, the I Would Never Stop, Hannah Diamond, Tommy Cash remix is not very good. Like, just because I think Hannah Diamond is a boring vocalist and Tommy Cash is terrible. I'm sorry.
Tommy Cash has only been good on like two songs.
I would debate that even. I fucking hate Dorian Electra. I hate them. They're fucking stupid. I hate the Gek 2 remix so much. It's possibly the worst song on this album. Black Dresses, I'm not gonna say no word. I still don't get it at all. I probably will never get it.
It's not for you.
Not for me. But the rest of the, I mean, like I said, I like Came to My Show and Toothless, and I think the Fish Center songs are again, the 800 dB Cloud Fish Center is fucking it's a fucking amazing performance. But yeah, if I wanted to listen to 100 Gex, I'm just gonna listen to 1000 Gex. This remix, it's a nice victory lap. But otherwise, as an album, it's just there's too much fucking happening. I think most of these artists just, like I said, they
didn't know what to do with it.
They know what to do with it. It's like
they more than,
because I think like hyper pop, like for the most part, a lot of these artists that are under the hyper pop genre, they're just, I think for the most part, most of them are just not very good in the first place. Like I said, the whole most of the PC music scene, I think is terrible. I never understood to begin with, and I think the post PC music is much more interesting. Like 100 Gex, Guppy, Fraxium, all these artists are making much more interesting music, and I think they're hitting on the ideas that PC music was trying to go for in a much better way, where PC music was basically just like, oh, let's just turn like sugary pop music up to 11. It's like, you don't want to go 11, you gotta go like, you gotta bump those numbers up, kid. Those are rookie numbers, all right? You gotta bump it up to like at least like 50 or something, you know,
or 100.
Or 100. Or 100.
Or 1,000.
It's the thing that baffles me is that they more than doubled the runtime for 1,000 Gex. Like, 1,000 Gex is like 25 minutes long, and this is like close to
51. It's 51.
It's
like 100,000 Gex was so good because it was like this small dose of this highly unstable chemical.
Exactly.
This is just like a toxic waste fallout.
It is the perfect sort of dose of the Gex to get as like an introduction and to like sit with, and then like you have everybody trying to just mimic it and reproduce it, and like nobody can do it as well.
It's like when you're trying to get like ketchup out of a ketchup bottle. It's like, all right, we need more Gex. Too many Gex. Oh, we've immediately overdone the Gex. We need to pull it back.
Oh, we gotta throw it in the trash now.
You gecked all over my sandwich now, Jack.
God. I
really? In front of my salad?
Good lord. I will say, while we're on like the post-PC music thing, Came to My Show is Party for You, but better. That's all I gotta say.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree with it. But yeah, like I said, I'm excited for 10,000 Gex. I'm excited for more Gex originals. Although there's one Gex thing I do want, right? A trillion Gex. A
billionaires with their geeks.
Oh my god. Okay. I really do want, I hope they eventually release on streaming services the Thos Moser remix they did during the Minecraft show, because that remix fucking honks, and I want to hear it not on YouTube. But, and by the way, Thos Moser, song of the year, question mark?
Oh god. Oh god.
Just putting that out.
Ukraine is poison. It's a poison.
It's certainly the most representative of this year.
Yes.
I think there's more.
Okay. I don't know. I think hyperactive pop song where they say all that shit does not represent the hell this year has been.
Good point.
Truly, utterly. Okay. Anyways, let's. Okay, we got two more albums to talk about. This is not the big one. This is. We're almost to the big one. This first one, the new Haim album, Women in Music Part 3. I'll just say this album took me by surprise. I was not expecting much from this album. I got some praise by critics. I'm like, okay, I guess I'll check it out. And progressively, this is just one of my favorite albums of the year. I think I like love this album quite a lot. I just keep going back to it and just finding so much to dig into and really like. And like I said, if you know me, you know that I am not a Haim person at all. I did not like Haim at all. I mean, literally, I think it half of the things that I said during like the Pitchfork 2019 trip was just like, why the fuck is Haim headlining? Like, why are they headlining this festival? Like,
well, I mean, they were in an in-between phase coming off of their worst album.
Yeah.
It was like very awkward timing indeed. And this one is like actually really great. Like, fucking, it's not solely production, of course, but like Ariel Reichstad and Rostam are on this, like on the boards for this, and it's just absolutely ridiculously good. They just get these hooks that are incredibly sticky and just wonderful, pleasant pop music, which is what I need right now.
Totally.
Also, it would be a nice luxury if I perhaps had a goddamn Paul Thomas Anderson to shoot my album covers and music videos and shit. Like how they pulled that off, but it's such a good cover too. Like the sign, the name of it, the 69 on the now serving board or whatever. It's just chef's kiss. It's perfect.
Encompasses the feel of the album tremendously too.
Yeah,
I don't really have much more to say to this than like it is a really just impeccably produced and like crafted album, and I am really into it. So I'm just gonna crib my music board review, which is, as somebody who's become a hot girl, I am legally obligated to love this album.
Same.
It's a lot of fun. My favorite track is I think I've told my girlfriend this, and she's like, what? I think 3 AM is my favorite song on this album.
Yes.
That one is a good one, but I think probably Another Try or The Steps, those two. Or I Know Alone. Ooh.
Yeah.
Those are all just stellar.
Yeah. I mean I mean this album, it's like it seems like a somewhat like of a continuation of Father of the Bride of that sound that Ezra was kind of going on with that album, and obviously the Ariel Reichstad production and Rostam and Daniel Haim being all over Father of the Bride. It's pretty clear these things were going to bleed into each other somewhat. And like I said, it's not to say this album is like, oh, it's the sequel or the spiritual successor. It's just like I said, Father of the Bride, I it's a great record. Many will disagree. Many will disagree, but they're wrong. They're wrong. Okay. It's a great record. And then this album is very dang good too. The vibes. I love the vibes. I don't know. Okay. Anyways, Haim album is good. It's time to get podcessed by the casters, baby. Let's go. Jackson,
a mistake to put this at the very, very end of the podcast because
after this fucking marathon.
However, I am re-energized and ready to yell because it's goddamn proto-martyr time, folks.
Yeah,
it's,
baby.
It's finally
Jackson,
out, the album that I've been anticipating from. Yes,
Jackson. Before you launch into your rant, I just want to ask: the boys, have you been processed by them?
I have been processed.
There
by
we
the boys
go.
I haven't. And I am very happy to report that being processed by the boys is indeed a fun and great time, and I would recommend it to all of you. And I recommend this Proto Martyr album to everyone because I think it is very clearly, for me, the best thing that they have ever done. I was not always like a big Proto Martyr fan. I listened to Relatives in Descent when it came out. I always think that album is called A Private Understanding because that's by far my favorite song from that record, but I liked it a lot. But I think that in general it didn't kind of grab me and stick with me in the way that I was kind of hoping for. And in the time since, I've gotten into some of their other stuff, but for the most part, I would never consider myself like a Proto Martyr fan until in December of last year at what was now perhaps the last concert I will ever go to, I saw them open up for Daughters in what I thought at the time was kind of a weird pairing, and I wasn't sure how that live set would kind of translate in that sort of environment. But then I was very, very impressed by how good they were live, and even more so, I was impressed by the new songs they were playing that were not yet released, including, I believe, Processed by the Boys. And I was just like, this is some good stuff right here. So I was starting to get the wins. I was starting to feel it coming and be like, maybe this next Proto Martyr album will be really good. And then Processed by the Boys comes out, and then I dive all the way into the hole. I love that single so much. It's maybe my favorite song of the year. It's just incredibly, incredibly catchy. The riff to it, the way it kind of that drum beat, that kind of steady drum beat just keeps going and going, and the way that the song evolves over the top of it is just so great. And I think the thing that I think makes this record really great in general, and the thing that differentiates Proto Martyr from similar kinds of post-punk bands, is that when I remember listening to, I think it was, to bring this podcast full circle, I'm pretty sure this was actually Stephen Hayden and Ian Cohen that were talking about this on an episode of Celebration Rock, but they were talking about Ice Age, and Stephen's complaint about Ice Age, which is something I actually kind of agree with, especially now that I've had a lot more time since that album, the Ice Age album came out, is basically that, like, it's a very cool record and it's very interesting to write about, but the songs aren't there. And I think that's just the case for a lot of post-punk bands, where they have the sound and the look figured out and they make music that is very, like, bait for music writers. Like, it's just so clearly, like, they can use their favorite words like angular, and they can talk about the themes, but when you get down to the nitty gritty of it, it's like the songs on that Ice Age album, Beyond List, like, I could not hum for you the chorus of Painkiller, the song with Sky Ferreira. It's a well-made album, and they're a very cool, interesting band, but the songs themselves are not there. And I think that was immediately what was really different about this Proto Martyr album, is I'm like, the fucking songs are here. Like, Processed by the Boys has been stuck in my head for fucking weeks. Worm in Heaven is such a great closer that has been stuck in my head all the time, that the lyrics of that bounce around my head all the time. Michigan Hammers is such a great single that I've listened to over and over. And as all the singles came out, I was getting more and more hyped. And then they did the early album stream, which Nat and I were both tuned the fuck into, and we wilded it out. As we watched Matt.
I said my name. I'm like, wait, what? No, I wasn't.
No. they streamed. They did like a whole visual album for this album, where each track has its own music video, and a couple of the music videos kind of segue into each other in fun ways. And it was just like, immediately I was fulfilled. The hype was worthy, and I was happy that I built this much hype up for myself, because I really fucking love this album. It is not perfect. I think there are, like, very small things I can nitpick about it, and I think in general the B-side is so much stronger than the A-side, but I think as I put it to Maddie, it's like the A-side is like a 7.5, an 8, and the B-side is like a 12, so it averages out. Like the whole second half of this album, once you get to that, the outro of June 21st, which is this really like peaceful
moment,
and the way that it just slams right into Michigan Hammer, it's like from that moment on, the rest of the album has this incredible downhill momentum where just every song from that point on is like incredible, and they all build off each other in a way that, I mean, this album just really makes me mad at other bands that don't know how to fucking sequence their albums, because like, even though this album is not perfect, every song is so correctly placed in the structure of the album, and they're all working to build off of ideas that the other one is doing, but also constantly introducing something new so it never feels like the same idea is being repeated twice in succession. And I just really love how varied it is and how much it expands their sound while also honing and refining so many of the things that were interesting about the band to begin with.
Yeah. You covered a lot of the points that I had in mind, especially with just how fantastic that B-side is, especially because Proto Murder have been just, especially in the last three albums of theirs, on a hot streak when it comes to sequencing and mimicking a seamless flow. But I feel like this is really the first album of theirs where that sort of emotional tonal flow, I think they've really nailed down in a way that they haven't before. Mostly because I feel like Relatives in Descent has a lot of these really despondent, crushing narratives, but the way it ebbs and flows doesn't quite cohere, if I had to come up with one criticism of it, quite like this one does, especially when that downward momentum gets you to Bridge and Crown and Worm in Heaven one after another, which is just one of the most absolutely punishing ends to an album. And I think that sort of vulnerability and really, really defined arc for the album has really kind of kept it solid in my mind, along with the fact that it is a cool breezy 40 minutes long, and just even 10 songs. It is quite literally like perfect classic rock album format, which is just made it impeccable. I believe the night that the album, the visual album stream happened, we had it loop like three times before we stopped, just because of how firmly and concretely like the entire album comes together.
Totally. Yeah, I did the same. I listened to it like three times on that streaming website thing. And I think in general, this is clearly like a step up in production and in presentation, like the addition of the woodwinds, which is the main real like sonic shift of the album, I think is so nice. Like when they come in like 2 minutes into Process by the Boys, and all of a sudden you've been grooving on this really, really great riff, and then all of a sudden that like clarinet woodwind comes in, it's so perfectly timed. And I think in general, there are a lot of post-punk bands that try to straddle the line between like punk and indie rock. And what ends up happening a lot of the time is that they kind of take the bad parts of each of them, where it's like it's subdued in a way that's making the punk stuff not as interesting, and it's punky in a way that makes it hard to enjoy the kind of, and I think the thing this album does so well is that it is able to seamlessly transition between the most aggro, the most like frenetic instrumental parts of it to the parts of it that are like really peaceful and melodic. And the way that they are able to weave back and forth so seamlessly, like Michigan Hammers is a great example. It's like a song that just starts out at 11 with this like crazy fast guitar riff, and this the drums on this album in general, like, oh my god, the drums are so fucking good on this whole album. And then the way that they're able to go from that high energy at the start of Michigan Hammers and seamlessly drop into those really breezy, like, beautiful
kind of shoegazy atmosphere,
exactly, and then just drop right back into the riffs of it. Like, they're able to switch between those two modes so seamlessly and have them complement each other really well.
I specifically want to shout out the bit that you have mentioned many times before in the chat on Modern Business Hymns.
Hell fucking when, yeah. Like,
they bring back the nasty riff but slower, and he's just shouting, "The past is full of dead men."
It's really, it's.
I was listening earlier today, and just that was like a punch in the stomach.
It hits hard.
Yeah, if we're talking about moments where they kind of melodically blend with their typical post-punk style, I gotta single out also June 21st, which is the most prominent song on the album, where Nandi from Halfwaif, who is throughout the album, but there it's just kind of a very direct duet between her and Joe, is just this gorgeous kind of serene song, but under it there's this constantly tense wound up instrumental that never lets up and keeps kind of exploding in punchy ways on the chorus. And it's this really tremendous natural way of incorporating these kinds of serene attitudes with this sense that that anxiety, the sort of tension that's at the center of their music, never truly leaves, even when it gets at its most peaceful.
Absolutely, yeah. This album just rocks in general. I'm a big fan of it. I think that whole B-side especially, but like Modern Business Hymns, Tranquilizer, like all those songs are just like so great. And I think the production and the presentation and the writing is so good. I mean, like, Processed by the Boys especially is like, I saw that song live, so I know for a fact that song was written before 2020, but it's like you listen to the album and you're like, oh, they must have wrote this like last week, right? Like, this is a song about the stuff that's happened in the last 5 days or whatever, because even since the single has come out, it has like, even beyond the whole stuff about like a disease washing up on the beach, like that's the real obvious like thing, but the way that the song and like the refrain at the end of the song where it's like, next time they'll be gentler, that whole refrain, oh my god, it just crushes me. It so effectively is able to capture the feeling of what we're living in now. And it's because it was like this before 2020. It was like this before this exact moment. So it's not exactly like they saw the future. It's just that they were, Joe Casey for a while now has been so tapped into this specific kind of despair that comes about in interfacing with the modern world as it is. And I think on this album especially, he's like really perfected that. Like the line at the end of Bridge and Crown, it's like, we're just holding on to little dreams to carry our bodies along. Like, I cannot think about that. It just fucks me up too much. It's so good.
I guess I'll offer maybe a slightly more critical take of this record. I don't have a lot to say. I think of like the wave of post-punk bands that popped up in the 2010s, I think Protomutter is the one that has had some of the highest potential that I still have. Like, it just still hasn't been met for me, because like I said, a couple of really great songs. Like I said, the Agent Intellect has a ton of great songs. I was a little disappointed in the last record. Like I said, the intro track, Relatives in Descent, is a fucking, it's one of the best songs of the decade. But like the rest of the record just didn't really grab me all that much. And this record, it's a bit of the same. Although the second half picks up, the second half, you are correct, the second half really does pick things up, and I think it's a little better. Like June 21st is pretty good. Michigan Hammers fucking rules. But for the most part, I'm still just kind of left being like, eh? Eh? I'm still mixed about Protomartyr. I mean, like I said, far from the worst post-punk band. Definitely one. Obviously, my favorite is still Ought. I think that their run in the 2010s is again one of my favorite runs of any band, even regardless of genre. But Bruno Mars, again, they're one of the more interesting post-punk bands out there, but I still find myself not always satisfied with their albums. I'm still always left a little... I'm always still left a little disappointed in each of their records, sadly.
I get that. I think there is something about their music that is, there's a little bit of kind of distance to it sometimes. I get what you're saying, because like, even though it really came together for me on this record, I've felt that way about other Proto Martyr records in the past, so I kind of get what where you're coming from on that. But I think for me personally, maybe it's just that there's a horse on the cover, maybe that's, or a donkey or whatever it is, maybe it's just cycle, but I really do. I think the singles, especially like Worm in Heaven, is such a great fucking closer. And when I first heard it as a single, I was like, oh, this is kind of really subdued for them. But then when it gets to that climax, and then when you listen to it in context of the album, it's just, there's some of the most cathartic moments on any record I've heard this year. The end of Modern Business Hymns, the end of Worm in Heaven, the big choruses when they come back to it on Michigan Hammers. It's just some really, so many great moments, and they're so well put together in sequence in a way that I think just really works for me. It's one of my favorite records of the year, for sure.
Yeah, we've officially been processed by the boys, podcessed by the casters. Hopefully you enjoyed this very, very long episode. This may be our longest episode
we've ever done. We gotta make sure that not all four or five of us are on the cast together. It's such a nightmare.
Okay, hopefully you enjoyed this episode. I'm going to keep it short. Again, follow us on Twitter at IndieHitsPod. Subscribe to us on Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts, or we're available. And once again, IndieCast, we're coming after you, baby. War has been declared.
And don't forget, fill out the form, download the app, submit your face into the scanner.
All right. All right. That'll do it for us. Hopefully you enjoyed this podcast. We will see you all soon, and bye-bye.
Cause I downloaded all my applications, and I'm just trying to airdrop something special. King Guppy, turn the snare up one more level. Like 303, we roll up. Fuck you, old rock. Oh, that's our shit, we rolled up from the sidewalk. I drop it in the toilet. Fuck it, roll it. This beat so good, someone stole it.